topic for this session is better brochures, newsletters, and worship bulletins, or bulletins of any kind, if you wish. And my name is Steve Hitchcock, and I work for a direct marketing fundraising firm called Mal Warwick & Associates in Berkeley, California. And we have
Mal
Warwick, W-A-R-W-I-C-K, Associates. It's a mouthful, and I've got a little bit of a cold, so I don't resonate as well as I should. And we have clients across the country, and I have both responsibility for the clients as well as responsibility for management of the company. Also, I'm involved as a volunteer with a group called New Models for Ministry, which seeks to encourage the ministry in everyday life that all of us have as God's people. And in the last week, I've focused more on ways in which that ministry is lived out. This week, I'd like to talk more about my areas of expertise, because I think part of my ministry in everyday life is to do what I do and do it well. And I think all of us have that calling to good Lutheran tradition of being craftspeople. I will pass out copies of the newsletter from New Models for Ministry, and if you'd like to continue to receive it free of charge without any obligation, you can write down your name and address. And if you've done it before at other sessions, you don't need to do it again. And so I'll just pass those out. The reasons that I am very interested in this topic and am willing to talk to people who are church-related, who may not be church professionals but are church-related, and I also talk to church professionals, is twofold. One is, given our theme of Christ is the memory of our future, I've always said the future is here and the church is in the past. And certainly with mass communication, I think the church is a long way in the past, and I think there is a critical need for those who are involved in the church at a number of different levels to know what is happening in mass communications and to use some of those techniques for effectiveness. The second reason is that I'm sure that some of you are here because in your jobs you have to write. And my assumption more and more, and my contact with people that I work with more and more, is that the ability to write clearly, quickly, and to communicate effectively are important ingredients of every job. I used to and still do a lot of workshops for secretaries and administrative assistants, and one of the questions that always arises is, how can I stop being a secretary and administrative assistant? I want to advance my career. I think the best way to advance one's career is to learn how to write well, how to communicate information effectively. Well, what I'd like to do is give an overview of what I see are the dimensions that work in brochures, bulletins, newsletters, etc., and then talk about these dimensions separately. The vision that I've used, the little mnemonic device or the little picture in my mind, is the radar screen from the old submarine movies that you'd see sometimes, and they'd either have the radar scope or the periscope, and you'd see the four quadrants. The four quadrants for me are format, style, the language used, rhetoric, whatever terminology you want to use, the design, and finally the content. Nothing new there, but I think what is useful is to say, what is the radar scope? And the radar scope for me is the audience. When you deal with these four issues of format, language or style, design, and content, You need to ask, okay, what's inside my radar scope? If you have a very narrow audience of Lutheran clergy who graduated between 1930 and 1940 from the seminary, the issues are rather confined. You don't have to worry very much about style, language, format. Sort of whatever you send them will communicate to them, especially if you're one of those people that graduated between 1930 and 1940 from the seminary. If you want to communicate with a larger audience, then it expands the number of questions that you need to address with regard to format, style, etc. And the larger the audience you want to reach in communications, the more you have to take these matters into consideration, the more in which they influence the impact of your communication. So what I'd like to do is, I think in direct marketing, interestingly, we know that the content of what is said, direct marketing is the junk mail that you get in the mail, that you get in your mailbox. That we know that the content, the actual words that are used in a mailing are the least important. They have the least impact on the response rate. So what I'd like to do here is focus on format, style, and design. And I think as we go on, you'll see that some of the questions of content will get answered. Does this drawing make sense to anyone with the useful device? Let's talk about formats. The title of this lecture or this presentation suggested four formats, I believe, but let's try to list all of them just to be inclusive on this particular point. Say you want to communicate some information to people, what are your options?
Verbal.
Okay. Always a good possibility. I think really important information should be communicated face to face. The problem is that it's very time-consuming. It's very time-consuming to talk to everyone face to face. It's even time-consuming to talk to everyone over the telephone. So after verbal, if we want to use written communication, what are some of the possibilities? We have the cheapest way to put ink on paper is called a tabloid, which is the Holden newspaper, and I'll pass around some copies of this so that you can all see that. After 2,000 or 3,000 copies, depending on your local printing business, the so-called tabloid is the cheapest way to communicate. We have newsletters, which is what that new ministry is. What are some of the other ones? How else do you, in churches, organizations?
We use bulletins and regular letters.
Pardon?
We use bulletins and regular letters.
Bulletins? Letters? What are some of the other ways that written communication gets disseminated?
Brochures and adverts.
Brochures. Ads. Both in newspaper, magazines, telephone ads, Yellow Page ads. Mm-hmm. An effective way to get news out is news releases. I've used news releases not because you think you're going to get press coverage, but because it's a way to get people that you want to read stuff to read it. If you want a board of directors to read materials, send them a news release. Here I'm sending you a copy of the news release that's being sent to the local news outlets. Lo and behold, people think, oh, this is really important. I better read this news release. Very effective way to communicate with people. Any others come to mind? There are reports. Most of us who have any business know that they're added to an item. They're usually collated in some fashion. The things that we use are called jet sets or speedy rights. I don't know what you want to call them. But it's interesting to me how effective these are. One of the reasons is they allow and expect people to respond. And somehow that ability to respond increases readership. I'll put jet sets down here. There are magazines. Here's a very interesting magazine that some of you may see. It's relatively inexpensive publication, both for subscribers and for the publisher. But it is a striking and well-designed magazine, I think. Posters. And we have here even a little mini poster, which tries to combine both a bulletin and a poster. Whether or not it works, I don't know. We can talk about that later.
Is that called a flyer?
Flyer is another good word. All of these are options, and I would say that when you're thinking about what the information is I want to communicate it and to whom I want to communicate it, then which one of these is within your radar scope? All of these have costs that are associated with them. One of the interesting tips I can leave with you is that I've learned in dealing with printers, and often some people are on tight budgets, if you go to a printer and say, well, I just need to print this bulletin or I need to print this flyer, okay, we'll print that for you. The same information, you call it a brochure, the dollar signs start to come on their eyes and they say, oh, gosh, we can charge more money for a brochure. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just in the name and it's not really in the format. But all of these are options that one can consider when wanting to communicate. Any other that I've overlooked or that you don't know what they are?
You jokingly say ESP.
ESP. I think, you know, Larry, that one of the things that I've... What makes all of these formats work is frequency. Advertisers learned that a long time ago. And because ESP doesn't work very well, people don't get up and say, gee, I wonder what's happening with Minnesota Public Radio. I better get up this morning and write them a check right away, because I bet you they just need my help. People don't have that ESP. People don't say, gee, University of Lutheran Chapel, I graduated from there 6 years ago, and I just woke up this morning and had this great feeling about them. I'll send them a check, or I'll write them a letter and see what's up. People don't think about you unless you think about them first. And so frequency is very important. I think for newsletters, tabloids, and some other publications that communicate news that the other issue is one of regularity. Can I predict that my Newsweek is going to come every Monday or Tuesday? People come to depend upon that regular sequence of information. To have an occasional newsletter to me seems to be an oxymoron. And the other thing that's important for those of you who are involved in the production of it, it's always easier to edit a monthly newsletter than it is to edit a quarterly newsletter. One of the assumptions, one of the myths that we have is, well, I'll do it every quarter and we'll make it 8 pages. Well, it's easier to do 1-page newsletter or news bulletin every month rather than to try to gear yourself up to do one every quarter. You'll find that you'll get into a rhythm if you have to do it every month, and it will become much easier. Any comments?
We do ours 2 times a month.
Pardon?
We do our 2 times in a month.
Good. Now, again, frequency, I think, is better. We live in a world in which there is redundancy. The television folks have learned that ads have to be repeated. The normal in the advertisers now assume that they have to repeat their message 7 times before it has an impact on people. The other rule or principle that's often said is, when you get sick and tired of your ad or your message, that's just when it's starting to reach people. So let's talk next about style. And here, what I'm talking about is language and the way in which we write. And what I'm most concerned about is readability. I can't even spell it this time. That what you write is readable. And there's been a lot of research, and some of it's research that's been done recently, and if I had my act together, I would have brought my little bibliographies about some of the publications on that. And if you're really desperate to know the research that's been done on readability, please write me at the address in this publication and I will send you that reading list. But the way in which readability is determined is by ease of reading. How easy is it for me to get through this material? And it's not a thing called human interest. Because you can have something that's very easy to read, but yet is very boring. And what human interest says is, how much do I get involved in this? What I'm going to do is just rattle off in somewhat random order some of the things that increase readability. Now, what's important to know is that good writing and good publication design always breaks the rules. That I'll read a bunch of rules and suggestions, and good writers will always be trying to break those rules. Because if we followed all these rules, we'd have very predictable, boring writing. On the other hand, I think it's important, whatever you've written, to always go back and say, okay, is it all right to break the rule in this instance? Did I break the rule because I was lazy and sloppy, or did I break the rule because I was creative and brilliant? So let me just read a bunch of them for you. Okay. Readability is increased by short sentences, sentences under 14 words. We know that people read in clumps of 3 to 5 words, and if they have to have more than 3 clumps, 3 groupings of words, they lose the very first words. So that if you have a sentence that has 21 words, it's very likely that the first 3 to 5 words at the beginning of your sentence are lost. People prefer to read compound sentences as opposed to complex. Does anybody, what's the difference between compound and complex? This is not a grammar class, but right. It's connected by a coordinating conjunction, and etc. A complex sentence is, while I am interested in art and music, I prefer to go bowling. The problem with that is that you have to keep that complex first part of the sentence suspended to find out what the second part is. And most of us, especially now that we live in a very fast-paced world, are always moving forward whenever we read. And we lose what the first part of the sentence. So a better way to write that sentence is I like art and music, but I prefer to go bowling. A very subtle difference, but one that does make a difference. The major failure that I see, and in my job, I have to review the work of a lot of copywriters, as well as some of the writing that people do to manage the company. and it's the use of the passive voice. And in good writing, or writing for readability, we're always aiming to write it in the active voice. Give me an example of a passive voice. We've got a rhetorician here.
He went to the store by way of the road.
Okay. How would you say that actively?
He took the road to go to the store.
Okay, that's better. Two things happen. One is, it's a shorter sentence because you use fewer words. It's a more exciting sentence because there's more action in it. He was hit by the car hit him. The car hit him is the active voice. The fourth item here is, again, these are random things. The best way to write for readability is, ironically, to write very quickly without editing. To put all your words down on paper. I learned this too late in life. I went all through school, all through college, and I labored over all of this stuff, and the best way to have done it was just get it all out on paper and then go back and rewrite it. And it's amazing. You've got this big project, you think you could never finish it, and you say, oh, what the heck, and you just put it all down, and amazingly, this tremendous sense of relief that comes in just getting that first draft down. And you'll find that your mind has a natural ability to organize. I don't believe in outlining. I don't believe in all of that other junk. I just believe you sit down and you write it, because there is a natural ability of the mind to organize your material in a helpful fashion. One of the benefits of that is that you develop a conversational style. We know that conversational prose is much more readable, primarily because it reflects what Roland was talking about, the verbal form of communication. Verbal communication, face-to-face communication, is the most effective form of communication, and good writing tries to replicate that. Rudolf Flesch, who is the grandfather of readable writing, who's written several books, and tried to help the Social Security Administration after World War II. And often, when young copywriters go to ad agencies, they're given a copy of Flesch and said to go read it. But what he calls talking on paper, that your goal is to be able to talk on paper. What that means is you use lots of contractions. He isn't coming. I'm not here, etc., etc. The conversational writing tends to avoid the use of that. He said he was coming. Now, you were taught when you were growing up in school that the sentence should really read, he said that he was coming. But when we talk, we just omit the that. We make it easy for ourselves. We understand that the that is there. Conversational writing tends to have run-on sentences. Now you'll see that many of these rules that I'm giving you contradict each other, because I told you to have 14 words in a sentence, and now I'm telling you to have run-on sentences. But when we talk, we tend to, at certain points, run-on sentences, because we found that that's the most effective way to communicate. The other thing that you see in conversational writing is the lack of concern for what is called parallel structure. You don't worry about whether or not there is agreement. You'll often hear people will say the use of the third person plural when you really are talking about everyone was there and they had a book. Well, correct English grammar says everyone was there and he or she had his or her book. But that's not the way we talk in everyday language. One of the ways that you get human interest in writing is to use lots of first and second person pronouns. I'm writing to you today to talk with you about an urgent matter. Now, there are other elements of human interest, but one of the ways in which we judge good writing is there you language in it? People feel very unfriendly about one person when the typical old English way of talking is one should really discover his or her primary interest. The way to write in a readable way is you should really investigate your career options. Talk to the reader. Readable writing tells stories and gives examples. Certainly, Barbara's sermon last night illustrated that. When Barbara told the story about Garrison Keillor, or when Barbara told, gave
told the story about
Garrison Keillor and Lake Wobegon days, or when she started to give examples of how we might be immersed in God's Word. Certainly, she drew us into her sermon. One of the tricks of readable writing is the use of compound verbs. There's a whole list of them. You'll see them in some books on readable writing. Establish can be... I've established a trust fund. No, it's better to say I've set up a trust fund. I'm going to continue doing this. I'm going to keep on doing this. The linguists tell me that these words, I think, are more Anglo-Saxon in derivation and therefore feel to English-speaking Americans to be more natural and more manageable. It also has the advantage of being shorter words, which again are more manageable. Readable writing uses lots of transitions. So, then, next, that's why. All of these, again, help the reader keep moving through whatever you've written. Readable writing avoids any word that you can't pronounce. People stumble when they can't pronounce a word. Even if they theoretically know what its definition is, they don't like it when they can't pronounce it. Whenever I would take German, about 3 weeks into the course, the professor would stop calling on me because I could never pronounce the words, and he just was so pained to hear me try to pronounce those words. I've often thought that one of the reasons I make my living as a copywriter is that I can't pronounce all the words that I know how to read. What that means, then, I think the natural conclusion of that is if you want to write well, you have to go back and read aloud what you have written. One of the best techniques to test your writing style is to go back and read it aloud. And you'll be surprised what you will catch as you read it. Remember, we're trying to replicate that verbal conversational prose, and you're going to find things that are awkward, things that are unnatural, things that are confusing. Some other techniques of readable writing are to ask questions, because that question mark wakes the reader up. It calls the reader back to attention. It involves the reader in trying to answer the question. The other way that will also involve the reader is to use quotations of conversational prose. Instead of saying, he said he was really concerned about that, it's better to say, he said, quote mark, I'm really upset about this and I'm not going to take it. Now, that's much more exciting, much more involving. You'll often see that news stories will begin with a statement from the politician or a statement from the city official. It's a very effective way to draw the reader into the copy. Let's just talk a little bit about how to organize for readability. Now, I said earlier that the best way to write for readability is to write quickly, to put all of your words down on paper. Now, that doesn't mean that you just say, okay, I've just written this masterpiece. That means that you then go back and check it. And one of the things that you check for is whether or not you have again made your poor English teacher upset. Because what you really want to do is to present your conclusion first. The most important information needs to go at the top of the document. The report, the bulletin, the newsletter, the news article, the news release, whatever it is. And the reason is that the overwhelming majority of people read only the first 50 words of anything that's written. Newspapers know that, magazines know that, people who send out news releases know that. TV is even worse. They have what they call sound bites, which I believe are 30 seconds, is that correct? So that most important stuff has to be up front. Now, what that means then is that you write backwards from the way most of us were taught. Most of us were taught to provide the documentation and then come to the conclusion at the end of the document, hence the word conclusion. So you start with your first statement of fact, and you just start collecting facts, and the facts get bigger and bigger. And really what you do is state your conclusion, and the least important fact is down at the bottom for those people who read all the way through. Well, I've gone through style very quickly. The list is a real laundry list. Are there questions or comments, disagreements? Some of this stuff is new, some of it isn't new.
Just one addition.
Sure, please.
What occurs to me is one way to get your information at the beginning of something you're writing is to write a really good headline.
Yes.
And to have the headline tell the whole story. That comes out in bigger type.
Yep.
It can be seen from across the room, and you can accomplish a lot right there.
It's a good point, which will lead us right into design of a publication. Let's just take this newspaper from Holden, because it illustrates what John is saying. Here's a newspaper, and there's been a tabloid, and there's been lots of studies of magazines, newspapers, and newsletters, for the very reason is that many of them carry advertising, and all of them want to justify ad rates. And so there's been a lot of attention, scientific attention, paid to what people read. And they have various ways of doing that. One-way mirrors, where they watch people with publications. They even have devices that can look and see where the eye is moving on people, where their eye is pointing on a particular publication. Okay, on this publication, where do people go to first? What's the first thing they look at?
Picture.
Picture. What's the second thing that they look at then?
Heading.
The what's called the cut line, or the caption of the photograph, is read second. Okay. Why do people go to the picture first?
It dominates the page.
It dominates the page? What's the other reason? Because people are in it.
Right.
Remember, readability is human interest plus ease of reading. Okay. So that means, what do you think in a photograph, what's the first part of the photograph that people look at? The face. And they look to see, in what part of the face do they look first?
The eyes.
The eyes. Very good. Because that's where, at least in American civilization, that's where all the emotion is. Very interesting. Look at the photograph of Kent and his family. That's a good photograph because there's lots of expression in the eyes and the faces. A much better photograph that's on the front page. The front page photograph is obviously a stilted one that's been prepared. The second place that people go to, the third place after the photograph, and the second is the caption, the third place is the headline, as John said. Okay. And John is accurate. I think the best headline here is Village to Celebrate 25 Years. These other headlines really don't tell me very much. If, like many people, all you did was read the headlines in this publication, it wouldn't tell you much. Now, here on this one, village offerings span the globe. Offerings may be the wrong word because we don't know whether that's offering in church or whether that's a course offering, etc. It is indeed a case of thank offerings. Business manager welcome, that's very easy to understand. So I could go through here and just read the headlines and get some of the information. There are basically three types of headlines. You'll love this. Anybody know what the three types of headlines are?
Medium and large. Yes.
Pretty close. One line, two lines, and three lines. And in most cases, you don't want to go beyond three lines, because then what you've done is frustrated the reader. You've told the reader that this is a headline, and now you've gone on for four lines. And in publication design, the lower the number of lines, the longer the line. So a one-line headline can be longer than a two-line headline. And a three-line headline should be shorter yet. Again, the reason is that a reader expects a headline to have as few words as possible and to communicate as much information in the least amount of space as possible. Frequently what's done, but what is not done in this publication, ever. Let's see if it's done in this one. Okay, here it is in this particular one, is that there is a subhead, sometimes called a kicker, that is above that when you want to communicate more information that will fit in this one long headline here. It's been put up in this kicker or subhead. So, let's go back and look at the design of a page again.
Are we on design now? Is that
yeah.
What
okay. I not, made a segue.
Not organized for readability.
Right.
We're not on that.
We're not on language or style any longer. The four elements are, again, format, style or language, which is number two. The third one is design, and we're on design now. Okay. The way in which most of us go about reading a publication and looking at a page is the Z. We come in here, and we exit here, and we go across here. And so a publication will try to get you started here and have you exit in some fashion here. Here's a good example of not doing a very good job of using the Z. If you're going to use the Z, you would have put, unless this is really what they want to make the most prominent part of the page, and I don't think it is, but I frankly would have put issue, spark, conversation up here at the top left-hand column where people come in. And I might have used this to keep the eye going. And here, you're asked to exit at a very uncomfortable part where there's a coupon. And the reason that that doesn't make a good exit for a reader is that a coupon needs to be clipped. And so a coupon should always be on the outside edge so that it feels as though it's okay to clip that out. Here you have to come and cut out of there. Let's take a look at another page. Here I think is a much better exit where you have this photograph down in the bottom right-hand column. That makes a much better exit through here. Here you have a two-page spread where they have used both pages and I think have done it in a fairly effective manner where you're using two pages instead of just one page to do that. The other thing that we know about page design is that here's this theoretically eight-line article, which is, obviously you're not going to have eight lines, but I don't want to draw more. Here's the same article which one of these articles will be most likely read by people?
I'd read the bottom.
Okay. You are not like most people. Most people will read this one. Why will they read this one?
Sure.
Because it looks shorter. It looks more manageable. And therefore, modern publication design seeks to create as much horizontal movement in a publication and to arrange articles in a horizontal fashion. Let's see if a good example of this one. Board positions filled. It would have been much better to have this as three columns across the page rather than to have it as a two-column article. It would have had a higher readability simply because it was organized in a horizontal fashion. It also would have made the publication easier to read for other reasons. The major reason that here, the other fault of this is that you have what is called tombstoning. And I see this in lots of church publications and church newsletters where they have a two-column format. Does that make sense to everyone? Mm-hmm. Two-column format? Mm-hmm. They'll put a headline at the top of each, and the two headlines will compete for each other. Which one of these stories is the most important? Publication design or report design, any kind of written communication, is a very judgmental activity. You have to decide what's the most important information, and you have to give it prominence. You know, is the church potluck the most important, or is the new church budget the most important? Make up your mind. Put that one at the top. One of the simplest and easiest things that you can do in the design of any publication is to be sure to include the name and address and phone number.
And the date.
That comes next. How often do you get this publication? Oh, this is really interesting. I wonder how I find out about more information. Or I wonder how I send my money, etc., etc. And if you don't have a name, address, and phone number, it's not going to happen. When I teach fundraising, I often say, even on the response cards that you send out, and we should take a look at this great example here. This is called a response card or reply card in direct mail. Where do I get more information? What if I want to call you up and say, I've got $1 million I want to leave you? How can I do that if you don't have your name, address, and telephone number on this card? The second most important thing, as you say, is to date everything. In publications, there's a thing called folio lines. And fortunately, the Holden publication has these folio lines, which says the name of the publication, the date of the publication, and the page. And I think that that's true of reports. Those of you who are doing business writing on your job or whatever, people, you'll be surprised how one page of a publication will get torn out, photocopied. One page of a report will get torn out. And nobody knows when it was written, what the original topic was, who was the writer, etc. Fascist about it at Mal Warwick and Associates. Put the page number, put the draft number even, the title or the topic, the date, and the initials of the writer of that memo or report. It seems like with computers, fortunately, you can do that automatically. But I am surprised at how frequently that saves saves written communication. Some other design ideas. Black ink on white paper is the most readable way, the readable form of publication design. That's why books are printed with black ink on white paper, because the contrast is higher and therefore the eyes are able to do that. There are two other colors of paper that you may use. It's sort of like the old, you can wear any color of shirt you want as long as it's white or blue. With paper color, you can use any color of paper as long as it's white, ivory, sometimes called cream, or gray. The gray and the ivory are earth tones, and they make people feel that this is solid, trustworthy, etc. You need to avoid pastels. And the reason that that's very difficult as people's eyes age, they have a lot of trouble with pastels. Pastels seem to confuse the ability of the eye to distinguish characters. You can use yellow, but yellow is very, very hot, and you need to use it carefully. You can see the yellow paper here. There's a certain amount, when you have black on yellow, it is very readable, but it also communicates an urgency, and sometimes you don't want to communicate that urgency. A second color, this is printed in what's called two colors. Second color should be used only for accent. Here you can see that, the et cetera here. You never want to use it for body copy. The eye wants to read black type. It doesn't like blue type. It doesn't like green type. It doesn't like purple type. It's very, very hard and tiring for the eye to read. So the second color is used as accent. The best way to make the reader move on is to always indent paragraphs. What that is it gives, the geologist will appreciate that, it gives it a little place for the eye to rest and to say, okay, now on to the next paragraph. Here, when they're all like this, it looks like one paragraph after another. Oh, geez, I've got to read all of this stuff. I'm sick and tired of this. The eye wants a place to be pulled in. A paragraph should never be more than 7 lines long. Doesn't have anything to do with what they taught you in school. Just count lines and create, start a new paragraph.
Does it matter how long or short the lines are?
Sure, it does. There are... We can talk about that in depth, but basically you want to have at least 5 words in a line. Any fewer than that, again, because the eye reads in clumps, it gets frustrated because it has to go to the second line. Usually we try to get too many words in a line. We get more than 7 or 9 words in a line, and the eye says, hold it here, give me a chance. I can't keep up with you. One of the effective ways to set off is what's called a drop cap. And for some reason, we don't know why, that the eye likes to have these little places where it comes in and says, this is a new idea, this is a new start. It pulls the reader's eye into the copy. You should never use italics type for more than 5 lines. Again, because italicized type is very difficult to read. Does everyone know what italicized type is? Okay. I used to say when I was teaching more secretaries, administrative assistants, my mission in life is to go around and take all those little script, those little balls that used to be on IBM typewriters, and to go and break them. If you're using a typewriter, there are 2 types of type that you may use. They're called Prestige and Courier, and the same with computers. You do not want to use Gothic type. You do not want to use any script types. Just stick with that. And if you're having typesetting done, there are typefaces that you should use. Century, Times, Roman, school book. Some of these spaces are really often combined with each other. But what we're really talking about is something very fundamental to readability. And it has to do with the evolution of type. And they're called serifs.
Called what?
Serifs. And unfortunately, this is produced in Gothic typewriting, typewriter face, and it is also called non-serifed type. And what these little serifs do If you look at the type that's here, it has little foots and little things on there, and you look at it closely, the letter is shaped. And the eye uses those serifs, it uses the shapes of those letters to read more quickly. If you look at this, this becomes very, very gray. It is all the same. There's no difference. The lines are all the same width, they're all the same shape, etc. Now, that makes a very effective design face when you have one, two, or three, or four words, but if you have word after word of non-serif type, it becomes very, very unreadable. The readability studies show that people just stop reading. This is too hard to read. I'm going to quit. The eye gets tired. We've got about 5 minutes. I'm going to scurry along. One of the ways that's very effective to get people to read design is to have lists. People love lists. And one of the effective ways to do that is to have bullets and then to justify or to align the sentences or lines underneath that. And there's a little trick for those of you who use computers or use typewriters. A lowercase O on the typewriter, like that. Then you go back in and you fill it in carefully with a black felt tip pen. And so when you photocopy it or have it printed, it looks like a bullet. It's a very inexpensive design element that you can use. One of the things that you want to avoid doing is to use all capital letters. Again, through the evolution, when writing started, it was in all caps. As we got more sophisticated, we learned that lowercase was really much, much easier to read because you go up, down, up, down, up, down. And all of that movement helps the eye do that. We get very tired of reading all caps. It's also very impolite because it's a form of written shouting. And in any conversation, we don't like it when people shout.
Except for headlines.
Headlines, right. And one of my rules of thumb is if you're going to have a headline with all caps, no more than 3 words. You'll notice that all these other headlines are downsized. They're all uppercase, lowercase. If you want to give emphasis, use italics or in a report, underline. Underlining is much more effective than capitalizing. We talked about photos just a little bit, that you look first at photo. One of the effective ways to use photographs is to crop them tightly. This cropping means that you cut off what's around. This photograph was probably much larger, but what was really interesting is this family. And so you try to get as much of the family in there and as little as the background as possible because people are looking at them. The other thing that's important in a photograph is to use it as a rectangular shape. For some reason, we feel very uncomfortable with square-shaped photographs. In fact, people will be asked about two different photographs to their reaction, and they will have a much more negative reaction to a photograph that has been squared. They feel that people are untrustworthy, that it's deceptive. Something about that rectangular shape. We come to expect photographs to be either this way or this way, but not this way. I don't know what it is about that, but we seem to like them that way. You know, the best photographs have two or three people in them. You can see that this photograph on the front page, one of the reasons that it's so ineffective is that there are so many people on here. We don't know who's important. We can't figure it out. We prefer to see smaller groupings of people in photographs. Let me just see if I covered my list. We talked about tombstoning. Okay. Two other quick elements and then we'll quit. It's called the Dollarville test. And one of the things that, and it works, I'm just surprised. You should be able to put a dollar bill, and if you can put this here, and there's no art touching the dollar bill. And art, art being a headline, a photograph, a coupon, or whatever, if it's all solid type, then you need to make some changes, because the eye will not sustain more than a dollar bill's worth of reading. Let's see if we can find a good... Here's... Here's a very good example. We should have had something to break up this grayness. Anyone who's suffered through the Christian century knows that they just try not to have... they must not have any money around Christian century. But, and you can try it both ways. Here, this is good. It passes the dollar bill test.
Oh, any direction?
Any direction. So you want to have it both ways. Again, now that, in a report, think about if you've got a business report, and if you went and read a whole page, and there was no subhead, no white space, no list with bullets like this, what's the chances that you're going to read that entire page of type? Unless you're really interested in it, the chances are very, very low.
When you say a dollar bill, you mean the whole article should be no bigger than a dollar bill? Or what do you mean?
No, that somewhere there needs to be some element that breaks it up.
Oh.
I can tell you, here, I decided that there needed to be that O there, because if there were a full line of type, it would have been all gray. And so that O is an art element. Something that's different from the body copy.